Kuzangpola, welcome to the Rigs Podcast. I'm your host, Sonam Yangdin. When Simon Anholt first wrote about nation brand in 1996, he simply observed that the reputations of countries behave like the brand images of companies and products, and they are equally critical to the progress, prosperity, and good management of those places. However, since then, the term has prominently evolved into nation branding, though with some differences in meaning and context. Countries today place huge importance on nation branding, and rightly so, as it has helped reap the targeted economic and social dividends. Today, one country that shines outright when it comes to successful nation branding is Singapore. The country, in its quest to become Asia's leading global city, has consciously and painstakingly invested its time, money, talent, and all the resources at its disposal to build Brand Singapore to where it ranks today. Mr. Koh Bok Song, the author of Brand Singapore, writes, "As a country, you can be paradise on earth, but it's no good at all if no one knows. The message has to be delivered well and get through to the target audience." This is very interesting. In order to further discuss on the importance of brand building, we would like to warmly welcome Mr. Koh to the Rigs Podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sonam. Very happy to join you.
It's truly a pleasure to have you. And to briefly introduce Mr. Koh, he has been actively involved in the nation branding of Singapore for almost 3 decades and led a team to create the Global Anthropolis brand concept for Singapore. The book Brand Singapore is Mr. Koh's 29th book as an author and editor. So my first question is, if you can explain to us, what is nation branding in simple terms and what are its different attributes?
I think the first thing to consider is that the brand of a country can be considered and treated as if it were a commercial brand. But there are big differences, and the biggest difference is that a country brand is much more holistic than a commercial brand, in the sense that almost anything can be relevant to a country brand and affect it. Any piece of news, any view that is expressed overseas. So this would include anything that a tourist guide, for example, in Bhutan, says to a visitor, or any opinion about Bhutan expressed abroad by an influential voice. Now, in Bhutan, you might have some control over what the tourist guide says, but it would the second opinions expressed by people overseas, it would be almost impossible to have any kind of direct influence over. And another difference is that for a commercial branding, we could just be talking about one particular product, and if there's some problem with it, with its brand, the company could just drop that product. But you can't do the same with a country a brand. You can't fire your citizens. Now, to take one example, which is in the news currently, in the United States, the issues with gun control have some influence surely on brand America, but it's not something that the country can change overnight. Change takes time, a lot of time. And the third point I want to make on this is that because of this, because of its the holistic, all-embracing nature of country branding, it means that every citizen has the potential to contribute. Hence, the importance of internal brand building, what a country does with its in communication with its own citizens to get as many people as possible to understand what is country branding, and then to see what contribution they could possibly make to enhancing the country brand.
Yes, thank you very much. And nations today are into this rat race to create a good brand for themselves. So why is it so important in this day and age? Why is branding, or why has nation branding become so important?
I'll address your question on the basis of where the world is currently. I think we are all nations are now at the stage of trying to see the best way forward in terms of recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. In some places, places that are quite heavily dependent on tourism, like, for example, Easter Island, it is absolutely critical to work on enhancing the branding of that place in order to then bring in the tourism that would enable the whole economy and the whole society to recover. In other places, there it is important to start afresh or almost to draw new investments and to repair some of the economic connections that were already in place. And some of these could include the supply chain arrangements in terms of delivery of goods and services to those places. And to add another point, which is connected to the state of the world, if you look at the Ukraine and the war situation there, it is the country brand of Ukraine and the perceptions of Ukraine overseas that determine the kind of support and help that they are getting from the rest of the world in addressing this difficult situation that they are in. So country branding is important in many ways.
Thank you, Mr. Gore. And now coming to Singapore, delivered in my introduction, and also from what we learned from your book, Brand Singapore, some of Singapore's most admired brand attributes did not just come by accident. Therefore, it also cannot be denied that nation branding continues to play a critical role in the success of Singapore as one of the most successful nations in Asia and the world at large. So if you could kindly enlighten our audiences on how Singapore continues to brand herself not only at home, but also in the external world so admirably, so much so that Singapore is a role model for the developing countries around the world.
Well, contrary to what some people might think, in Singapore, there is actually very little that is done at the overall level, you know, in terms of the mother brand. There isn't one central office that directs everything. Instead, most of the building of Brand Singapore is done at the sub-brand level. And here it is done in terms of a very strategic, well-planned, direct marketing in four main areas, what I call the two T's and two I's. The first two T's are trade and tourism, and the I's are investment and immigration. So for trade, Singapore has, from the earliest days, been very focused in expanding its trade and network. For example, currently, we have more than 20 free trade agreements with countries and regions around the world. And as an island nation that is so dependent on trade, that's very, very important. For tourism, we have the current country brand is centered around the key idea of a passion made possible. And in summary, we're trying to promote the idea that Singapore is a place where people who are passionate about various aspects of tourism can come here and build their business and thrive in the whole tourism sector. That on investment, we have agencies like the Economic Development Board, where I worked for 5 years in the early 2000s, which are focused on bringing in direct investments to Singapore from all around the world. And the last I is immigration. And here too, there's a very a targeted effort to connect with and to persuade global talent to relocate to Singapore, whether to study, work, or even to take up citizenship eventually. Now, in addition to this direct marketing, there are also overall factors about Singapore that contribute to its to the strength of its country brand. I'll cite just two. One is stability, and that comes from effective governance and also the management of security, as in including geopolitical security. And the second factor is efficiency in terms of general administration of the country and also the management of its infrastructure. And this second point, the efficiency of the administration and infrastructure was absolutely important in helping the country to get through the worst parts of the pandemic so far.
So in Singapore's case, the major, the prominent actor in leading the country in its nation branding effort is the state. So how can the government, the private sector, and an individual work together to promote a vibrant and lasting nation brand?
I think from the perspective of the state, a nation branding is something that has to be led from the top. That the state can facilitate and provide overall vision and framework. For example, in Bhutan, in terms of environmental stewardship, managing the forests and all the other environmental resources that you have, that's something that only the state can organize overall. But of course, what is also crucially required is the participation and collaboration of the private sector and the individual. The private sector can do a lot in terms of the products and services. If we take an example like South Korea, in terms of how the private sector has been effective in shaping international perceptions about Korea's country brand, much of this has happened in the arena of pop culture, like for example in music and in the Netflix programs on TV. So and of course this can also be demonstrated and promoted through commercial products, the products and exports of a country, which I know is also one of the newer priority areas in Bhutan. And lastly, I think individuals should recognize that they also have a lot of scope to contribute to their country brand. And today with the internet, all of us are equipped to do so by our contributions to the various forms of media, whether mainstream or alternative, and on platforms like YouTube. I mean, any one of us could create a YouTube video that could go viral, that could then have some major impact on our country brand.
So now coming to Bhutan, as someone who somehow understands Bhutan's limitations and potentials at the same time, what are the key areas that Bhutan's nation branding effort could focus on from your perspective?
I think that let me just talk about a couple of aspects. One is tourism, which of course is very, very important to Bhutan. I think one thing that could be done is to see how to take your tourism branding to the next level. I think that Bhutan is already right up there in terms of country brands, in terms of the brand awareness. I think you ask most people around the world, they would immediately think of the concept of happiness and connect that with Bhutan. So if you're already in a very good place, but the key is to how to take it to the next level, especially in this post-pandemic environment where there are some significant changes in terms of behaviors, regulations, and so on. And of course, you would want to attract new travelers while at the same time also seeing how to draw on repeat customers. And one place to look at could be in terms of branding the districts of Bhutan. You know, because thus far, I think most of the tourism have been to places like Thimphu and Paro, but there are many other parts of Bhutan which are less well known, which have a lot more potential for tourism as well. Now, in terms of investments, there are two key areas. One is to highlight the value propositions. And for example, I think for Bhutan, connecting your brand attributes with the value of sustainability is something that you are very well placed to do. And the other thing is to see how to align your sub-branding with the mother brand, the whole concept of happiness.
So three things that you shared are taking the tourism branding to next level, investment, focusing on investment, and allowing sub-branding with the concept of happiness.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you, Mr. Kaur, for your perspective. So in your book, Brand Singapore, you wrote, in the Standard of Branding Word Association test, many people think of Lee Kuan Yew the moment Singapore is mentioned. So what role does leadership play in nation branding?
I think leadership, in this case, I think we are talking about political leadership, is absolutely vital. In Bhutan, your king, the king of Bhutan, has demonstrated admirable leadership through leading the country through the pandemic. So I think there are many great stories to tell around there, centered around the leadership of your king and all that represents. Again, citing Ukraine, its current president Volodymyr Zelensky has grabbed the attention of the world in terms of his demonstrated courage and the way that he has been able to communicate both to his own people and to international audiences. He just spoke at an international conference on regional security in Singapore. And this is, of course, a critical factor to the country. I think on the question of leadership, there's also a pandemic factor in the sense that something that has become even more prominent in the last 2 years of the pandemic, which reinforces this point about how important leadership is to brand nation brand building, and that is the fact that the state, the role of the state, has become a much more crucial. Just think of all the on the domestic front, everything that has to be done in terms of enhancing public health, and internationally in terms of border control. I mean, these two factors alone have reiterated the key role of the state in steering a nation forward. And this, of course, reinforces a point about how important leadership is to nation brand building. So those are the three aspects, the state, the private sector, and individual, and they should all work together.
And in your book, you stated that in the global nation branding game, there is no such thing as job done, but only an unending effort of branding, brand management, and rebranding. So can a nation or a company, let's say, rebrand itself after a major downfall and still come out stronger? So how does branding work in such a situation? Because you also said that a brand keloid cannot be so easily excised or removed.
Yes, well, for sure. A country, just like a company, can certainly recover from negative impact on the brand. For countries, I think two prominent examples would be Japan and Germany after World War II, the extent to which they have been able to not only recover but flourish. Today, the country brands of Japan and Germany are two of the strongest in the world through the various aspects of what their brand represents, which people have come to recognize and appreciate. In the case of Japan, in the earlier decades, it was the quality of their products, especially household products like refrigerators and also cars. But that has gone into a bit of a period of decline. But another aspect which has continued to grow from strength to strength is the refinement of its culture, various aspects of it, its art, food, design, entertainment, and so on. And for Germany, we've seen the leadership of the Chancellor Merkel in the earlier decades, the influence in across Europe, and of course the German product, again German products, cars like Japan, the German brands in cars and other products have continued to lead the market in many areas. Now you mentioned the concept of the brand keloid, which I coined in my book Brand Singapore. The idea that the analogy of comparing a negative aspect of a brand to a keloid, of a physical keloid, like a scar on your body, which would be quite difficult to remove and quite painful, and if you try to address it directly. So the thing to do is not to spend too much time or to be hung up about trying to address it directly or to get rid of it quickly, because in some cases it's practically impossible to do that. And instead, the attention and energies and effort should be focused on just building the positive aspects. So if we apply that to what we've just been talking about Japan and Germany, that's what they have done. They focused on the positive aspects of what they can offer to the world in terms of products and services. Even ideas and values, and that's what has brought them where they are in the world today as leading country brands.
Thank you very much, Mr. Goh. With this, we come to the end of the program. Thank you very much for joining us. And at the same time, I would also like to urge all our listeners, all our audiences, to please grab a copy of the book Brand Singapore, because it has a lot of insights to offer. So thank you very much for all your wonderful perspectives and insights on branding, nation branding.
Thank you very much, Sonam. It's a real pleasure to have this conversation with you, and thank you again for having me.